Hi, I'm Keith and the Girls, Keith Malley.
And I'm Khemda.
Welcome to My Opening Line. This is the show where we talk about comedians and their origin stories. How did they start? What did they perform? What literally were their opening lines? And when that failed, why did they keep going?
And when they were super embarrassed, how did they get on stage again?
First of all, make sure you're subscribed to the app Laughable. You can go to laughable.com, download this free app, and subscribe to, you know how to subscribe to podcast, but now you can subscribe to the person.
So the guest, if you really like the guest, so chances are the guest also has a podcast of their own, but chances are also that they're guesting on other people's podcasts. So you not only can follow the host of a podcast, you can follow where they guest.
Subscribe, for example, I don't know, Dante Nero, you type in. Then anytime he's on any show of any kind, it pops up in his feed. What I like about this is because sometimes artists, they're on their bigger shows, but then they're on somebody's podcast almost as a favor in a third country, and they spill the dirt thinking no one's going to hear it. Keith Malley does. I hear it because I'm a Laughable subscriber. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is teaching me about man school from the Beige Phillips Show, Dante Nero.
Hey, what's happening, guys? How y'all doing?
How are you?
It's good to be here. You know I love y'all.
I told Dante this before on Keith and the Girl, but I get nervous anytime I hear there's a show that's going to tell men how to be men and women mm-hmm. how to be women, right? But I get a kick out of him, and I think the advice is good, and I leave there getting my balls back. Bitches leave there being better bitches. The slogans I still don't know about, but people obviously are learning things. So I want to talk about the start with you of many things.
Sure.
First of all, as for the podcast, I know that the great Patrice O'Neill had a show of all titles called Bitch Management.
It was Black Phillip. Black Phillip Bitch Management. That's what it's called.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you co-hosted on that one or just on the Beige Phillip? Just on Black Phillip.
Yeah, we started that together. Okay. I mean, he was on Sirius Radio with Opie and Anthony for many years, just tearing that up. And Opie was like, you sound like the Black Dr. Phil.
Okay.
And you mean the ghetto Black Dr. Phil, and he called himself, he said, you're like Black Phillip, right? And that was the joke. And then they gave him a show with like 13 episodes on Sirius. And we actually did it live on regular radio for a couple of, for like two episodes.
And it was an advice show at the time?
Yeah, it was relationship advice, just that kind of stuff.
Now, I've heard people talk about Patrice O'Neill. If they call him for advice, he's pretty harsh. He'll be like,
oh, yeah,
stop being such a pussy and hang up on you.
Well, I don't know if it's that, but I think the show came around a time where he was very dissatisfied with the male-female social interaction. And he started talking about it. And he used to call me up and talk about it. We'd talk about it on the phone all the time. And he called me up one day, hey, you want to do this show with me? Seriously. I was like, yeah. And he was like, I go, well, what's the format? He go, what are we doing right now? And that was it. So there was no format, no production. We just cut the mics on and rock. Whatever he had in mind, I just kind of had to fill in the cracks.
What was he sick of? The dynamic between men and women and how we all play
I think he felt as though there was this thing where he felt like women weren't being responsible for the shit that they do to men. I mean, naturally that was his perspective because he was a guy. I mean, he wouldn't really look at the way men treat women. So it was something that personally affected him.
Okay.
And he was just bitching about it, bitching like, what about this? And what about that? What about this? And right. So one of the things that he would say is that the level of entitlement that women have about marriage and the fact that if they like you, then you should marry them.
Was he ever nervous about his health? Did you ever have to tell him, I got to tell you, man?
Yes, he was. He was always. He was always. That was always a consideration for him. But, it's like, food addicts have a hard time because you can't go cold turkey. I mean, cold turkey is delicious.
Sure.
But you can't go. So you're always confronted where you have to manage this all the time. And so he was always... It was always a concern. In fact, he used to say, I'm going to die soon. He used to say that all the time.
Right. No, he would sweat a lot. I'd see him perform specials and he'd have to come out with a towel.
Yeah.
And you know, you just hope.
Yeah.
hope he knew, and I guess he knew when it didn't.
Did you ever see him do stand up like live?
Yeah, I saw.
Fucking amazing.
I saw him live.
Yeah, really.
And he at I don't know if Kenda and I were at Beacon or where, but he was recording a special wherever this was at.
Uh-huh.
And on the back of the monitor, there's a monitor in the back that can give cheat notes uh-huh. to the comic on stage.
Yeah.
And to me, that fascinates me. We're 50%. I have my head turned the wrong way.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
you're watching the prompter of like, what's the next bit coming up?
What's he going to turn into? What's bitch is going to be? You know? So it gets to a point where I'm turning back and it's just blinking, wipe your forehead. And I'm looking at him like, do you see that? It is sweating, but you know, he doesn't want to bring much attention to it.
But he also doesn't, like he's so... one of the things I learned
not sweating
about,
nerves, sweating health.
Yeah. But he was so fluid. Like, you know, I remember the first time I saw him, I was like...
Yeah, he wasn't sweating. Sorry. He wasn't sweating because he was nervous. He was sweating because also he wore a leather jacket that day.
Yeah.
Leather jacket.
Yeah. He was kind of trying to find his fashion and stuff. what's funny is that... So when I first started doing comedy, I knew that I'm kind of a... You know, I'm a lot to take in all at once. And
like
so,
looks wise?
Yeah. Mm. So,
you peacock.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just
your whole being is a peacock.
I guess so. Yeah. And
when you look at some of your acting roles, you know, you're credited as bouncer.
Yeah.
Man that kills you.
Chop shop owner, right. Whatever, murderer, hitman. It's all my stuff. Every once in a while, they let me spread my wings and I get to throw somebody in a dumpster. But that's only once in a while. And
that's when you do your own stuff.
But when I got on stage, I knew that that would be a distraction. And so I would just wear a colored t-shirt, jeans, and I would play like Timberlands to match my t-shirt, of course. And I mean, I'm not a savage. And like I would wear like a wristband, just a leather wristband and a bandana.
You would
match.
Take the bone out of your ear?
No, I would wear the bone, but okay. I just wouldn't wear... Like
the extra.
If you see me now, you know, I mean, I'm out there, I'm just embroidered shirts and jewelry and
I mean, you have an
alligator
tattoo.
Shoes. Yeah. And alligator shoes, ostrich shoes and just, you know, a lot of regalia.
Your look screams, bitch, better have my money.
Yeah, what? AMG is a good group. So when I started getting comfortable on stage, I had all this clothes from me dressing and I started dressing like I normally dress. And then that was a whole nother adaptation because people were like, what the fuck? Right. And then Patrice started dressing, right? First he gave me shit, you know, he bust my balls. So then I looked like the guy from Mambo Number 5.
Louis Vega?
Oh, Louis Vega. So I think I had a shirt, like this really nice cotton shirt, but it was hand-painted. Like abstract hand painting on it, and I probably had like a pair of olive green alligator shoes, and and he just fucking ripped on me. But then I ended up buying him, taking him out to get his first pair of gaiters, and then he started wearing hats, and then I took him over to Crown Heights to the Jews to get them to cut his, you know, because you got to crop your hat, you got to go to Haberdasher, you just don't wear that hat. Like you buy it.
Oh.
Can you imagine I pay $200 for a hat and there's more? Fuck you.
You gotta cut it down.
Get it fitted?
Yeah, no, well, you cut down the crown and you shape it and you know, like my dad was, you know, my dad was born in 1920, so he came up Zoot Suit days and you wore your hat, you steamed it over kettle and starched it and you put creases and
your dad was born 100 years ago?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, he was the baby of 16.
Oh,
the only youngest boy. Mm. So I had aunts that were born 1800s.
Well, by the way, anyway, I'm not trying to blame you, but you have to think about it. The guy weighs 500 pounds. You're telling him to wear a hat.
Well, I didn't tell him. The hat was his, because he's kind of, first he was wearing suits. If you look at some of his old stuff, you'll see.
Oh, that's in, right.
Where he was wearing full suits and ties and alligator shoes and brims. And then he kind of went from, you know, like classic sneakers with,
That was kind of like Steve Harvey-ish, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, he was wearing it. Not, he wasn't wearing the long suit with the 84 buttons, but he, you know, it was a nice tailored suit. You know, a nice tailored suit and the tie, silk tie and stuff. And he changed it over. And he really, you know, he started dressing with his hats and jackets and stuff like that. And then it kind of morphed into something sort of between, because initially he used to wear jerseys, throwback jerseys.
Well, before like you were Brown. Before you were a fashion icon, what made you even step on stage?
So I was a male stripper for 10 years.
You were
years.
A male, not a female stripper.
I was a male stripper. I mean, I would have did both. Got to get the home. Right. I was stripping and I Def Jam dropped. And I was just watching this whole Def Jam era blowing up. And I just always loved comedy. I was always into comedy. Like even when I was in elementary school, I went to Catholic school. I would rush home, sneak in my father's cabinet and listen to his Cosby and his Pryor records and Red Fox and Mom's Mabel and stuff like that.
By the way, one of those people are not like the other. And I only mean content wise.
Oh, we mean, oh,
everybody's dirty, you're saying, except for Bill Cosby.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. But here's the thing. I was a kid who stayed up and watched Johnny Carson every night. And so, like, I knew Gary Muledeer. You know what I mean? Dana Carvey, the amazing Wid.
Is that something? Did you hang out? Did you hang out with like I don't know, lack of better words, bad boys? And would they mock you for liking comedy?
No. I mean, okay. There's a thing that I don't think white people understand, that there's this inner thing about when you're a light skinned dude and you live kind of in a rough area, you're assumed to be soft. And so, at a very young age, I learned that you can't give no quarter. Because once you give quarter, then you're getting chased home every day.
Right.
So I was, that's kind of what I got, why I ended up being kind of a roughneck, because I didn't really have no choice. I was very handsome and I was good in school. You know, I was pretty good in school and I didn't grow up in a rough, like in the projects. I grew up in a brown, my dad bought a house for $11,000 in Crown Heights. You know, way before I was born. And so I grew up in a house. My father worked for the parks department. My mother was a stay-home mom. And so I didn't have the street, like I grew up in the projects and pissy elevators and back staircases and all
that. So where did you pick up the street credit?
I just was running the streets. Like I was oh. just.
You just run them.
Yeah. You don't got to live there. You just, hey guys, I know you guys are going hungry with no heat, but I'm going back to the house. We got to put up the Christmas tree.
How do I teach my kids to run the streets?
I wouldn't teach them to run. Okay. I don't know if somebody, I don't think they're running the streets anymore. Everybody's online and they don't, like we used to play out in the street. Like we'd play stickball and hot peas and butter and kick the can. And
but is that all you mean? Like you
and
walk
kick
around
the can?
Like, yeah, you walk around like you own the place playing kick the can, or are like drugs involved?
I mean, I was out in the street playing. We used to play. Okay. And so kids from other neighborhoods, we would all play together.
Okay.
And so I met rough dudes who's,
I see.
And then you're with them. And then there's this whole, you know, there's all this pecking order of testing. Who, you know, whether you're scared or not, and you gotta step up when you have to step up.
A lot of fights.
Yeah. It would fuck with me a lot.
Well, now I gotta ask you about your first fight.
First fight. I can remember that. There was a bully. His name was John Shade. Fuck you, John.
How old were you?
I was second or third grade.
Oh, that's really young.
Yeah, second or third grade, and this guy he was young, like he had older sisters, but he was all the only boy of like three or four younger sisters, which is kind of same as me, but he was just a little rough kid. Just so you go to the cafeteria, he would take your french fries and you know, just constantly tormenting
french fries, that's the good part.
Yeah, he just would torment you. And I was a kid, my dad was really overprotective. And so everything was like, don't play out on the street. You'll kill yourself. You get hit by a car. Don't go there. You get killed. You're going to get shot. It was always everything. And so I grew up like a really scary kid. And, so I would, somebody would take advantage of me. And then my sister and I stayed in the same room. We had bunk beds. And so when somebody would disrespect me, I would, you know how, I don't know if you've ever seen bunk beds, you know how the springs are underneath the mattress and the slats. And I would be staring at those springs and slats. Like, I could have did this. I should have did that. Right. Like this. It just, for like 2 weeks, I wouldn't sleep. Somebody would take it back. It was just like compulsive for me. And then, and this kid was just tormenting me. First grade, second grade, third grade. And then I just got tired of being scared. And
Why do I feel like you're about to say you killed him?
What? No, I should have.
I'm just guessing it's a chalkboard. I think it's a desktop over and over and over his head.
And he would just threaten you and just torment you. And I would go, and I was like, all right, let's outside. Let's do it.
Right.
And we came outside. And when he came out the door, I hit him in the mouth. Bang. And then I realized.
Isn't that nice though? Third grade, you still know where you take it outside.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Well, that's because we were gentlemen. And I went to Catholic school, so the nuns would beat the shit out of you. So, but it was, I started to realize that something about fear is that fear exists between the time an opportunity is presented and you access that opportunity. So the longer you take to access the opportunity, the bigger the fear burns. We talk all the time. I mean, you know, whenever we talk, it's always, I always look at things in a philosophical way. And so, and everything is, all knowledge, I think, is interchangeable. I say this all the time, that true wisdom is the understanding of underlying concepts, how they relate to situations that seem irrelevant, but really are not. So as you learn something fundamentally is a root universal truth, you can apply that to everything that you do in one way or another.
You're saying when you say this to men, they go, yeah, I totally get that.
Well, you know, they always go, what? And then I got to explain it. But it's so the fear of it. So one of the things is, if you remember, there's a physics rule, things at rest tend to stay at rest. Things in motion tend to stay in motion. So what happens if you have a big boulder and it sits in the sand, the longer it sits in the sand, the more it gets rooted in that sand until it can't be moved. And so when your thinking is the same way, emotionally is the same way. So you have to keep your emotions fluid, as opposed to we're all, now we're in this place where we're all digging in.
And this came to you at fourth grade.
It did, but not in the form of this.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying? I'd always been trying to figure out what it was. But I knew that I was afraid, and the longer it took me to do something when I was afraid, the less likely I was to carry it out. And then I kind of got to my first fight was like, I just did it. You know, it's done.
Yeah.
I don't have to worry about it anymore. And the guys stopped fucking with me.
And it's proof that you can do it. So you can do it again.
And
so now, speaking of fear,
sure.
So how long before you decided this is comedy is what you're going to do until you got on stage?
So I, well, like I said, I was a kid watching Johnny Carson. I mean, Seinfeld, Gary Muledeer, just really obscure. Any stand up on the late Tonight Show, I would be sneaking up to watch it.
Isn't this funny, though? I'm definitely judging a book by its cover, but would you look at Dante Nero and go, and I couldn't wait for Carson, and he would talk to the animal trainer.
Oh, shit, yeah. I fucking loved the animal trainer. I loved it. And I actually wanted to be a veterinarian for a while.
Did you cry when, what was the last show of Carson? Who was that singer?
I don't know.
Who's the Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy from Company C? Who's that? You know it. And Bette Midler. Midler is crying and singing goodnight to Johnny Carson on the last episode.
I didn't think I saw it. But because I wasn't supposed to be up late watching it anyway.
Okay.
So I was always sneaking up, you know, trying to watch the comic or whatever. And then I went to college and whatever, and then the whole Def Jam era blew up, and then I was like, oh, this is the greatest thing ever. And so at the time I was a male stripper, because I wasn't a female stripper. And I had a group of guys who were doing that, and
I remember this one boyfriend I had, he wanted me to strip for him, like at home everything, and I was like, I will absolutely female strip for you tonight.
It's good, because you don't want a dude strip with him.
I don't know. I'm glad he was specific.
I would
have to learn how to male strip in that moment.
Get the strap on. And so So it was, I started using guys like Tracy Morgan, Jim Brewer, Mike Epps, these guys. I would use them to open the strip shows. Like they would go up and do comedy first.
How would that go over? Because I always wonder why that booking would happen. And it turns out so that the stripper wants to be a stand-up.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean.
If I have my dick in my hand.
Yeah.
And then like Tracy Morgan comes on.
They would go on first.
Right.
Right, but I still have my dick. I came for my dick to be in my hand, right?
Yeah. Well, I think you're oversimplifying it, you know.
First a little levity, then I cream my pants.
Right, there you go. So
a little humor, and then I take your ass and jack it off.
Yeah.
Wait, is this female strip clubs or male?
Male. Like, we didn't have male strip clubs. It was just, you would rent out a huge hall. Rent chairs, set up your bar.
So you would have female audiences when these comics would come on?
It would be all female.
Oh, audience. Okay.
That's it was all female audience. Okay. And then whoever was performing would be there. And the comic would do a few minutes up front. And then we bring the host on. And the host would do the show. And then we'd do the show.
Maybe women can get into that?
Maybe Tracy Morgan kept talking about getting them pregnant, and that's what got them hot.
Well, he wasn't. You're talking about late Tracy. This was Tracy with a propeller beanie doing Michael Jackson with a tube sock on his hand instead of a glove.
He didn't evolve yet into getting everything pregnant.
Yes, okay. It wasn't everything pregnant until much later. That was much later. after he was a millionaire is when he was getting everything pregnant.
He can afford to get everything pregnant.
I discovered rubbing my belly. He's good. He didn't know that years ago.
So
I would do that, and I always wanted to do comedy. But as a I was one of the better strippers. Like I was number one male exotic dancer 7 years in a row on the East Coast.
What's your secret?
I made up the award.
I wish. it was the secret is being present. I think it's just like great sex. You have to be present.
Where do you get the award? Like they've been sneaking in and taking notes?
Well,
the judges?
You would have a performance. They would have a performance and then they would pick.
Oh. I want to go to that performance.
Yeah, it was I had a
What's your move? How many fat chicks do you pick up?
I have a bad back. Honestly, I have a bad back because I used to pick up huge women. I used to pick up women 450 pounds and throw them over my head and all kinds of stuff. And
when you do that, like, does a woman ever, do you ever come towards an overweight woman and does the woman go, no, I know this, this is embarrassing, or did they get into it?
Oh, they was always into it.
Wow.
You don't.
It's fun to get picked up, to be honest.
Yeah, it's fun to be picked.
Whoever you are.
It's fun to be picked up.
That's what I'm saying.
I don't want to, I feel like I'm ruining this for some ladies out there, but you're now being picked up because you're the fat person and you don't get the attention usually.
Well, here's the thing.
They'll also pick up skinny chicks though.
Yeah.
Too.
Oh yeah. You toss everybody around. Everybody gets tossed around
with me.
It's a whole salad if you get money.
I used to have a move where I used to call it the war dance. Okay. Right?
Of course.
So I would sit a girl in a chair and she would face me. It would be her birthday or something like
that.
By
the way, I think you came up with a name first, but go on.
Well, actually, my boy Reggie the Bodyguard, this guy named Reggie, he's the host and he would MC it. And he kind of came up with it. And I used to stand in front of the girl and I would do like this dance, bam, 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 bam. And then I would like straddle her and hump her in the chair. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would take another girl and I would have another girl's chairs facing. Mm-hmm. And so one girl would be sitting in one, and the other one would be. And then I would go like reverse cowgirl on the girl on the other chair. And then I would arch my back into the other girl's crotch.
Oh, just like in Maui. I was at a luau.
Grab the back of the chair and then throw my legs up in the air into a hand like a headstand while I was in her crotch.
Yes.
And then I would
Hemda loves that.
And I would jump like I would direct my body to the back of the chair. Mm-hmm. And then I would pick her and the chair up in the air and put the legs of the chair up into the air.
I get that.
Yeah.
And that is very nice.
Well, I'm looking for an award.
Yeah.
That's what really I got.
It was really involved. And but I think the thing what makes a good it's funny because if you look at like Channing Tatum and you ever see Magic Mike.
Yes.
When I watch him and you watch. So like you have straight.
He basically does like one move over and over again.
The belly roll.
Yeah, yeah.
No, he doesn't do that. He does do a belly roll, but he. So when I saw him, so there was Michael Strahan does a. He has a act in there too. He's one of the strippers in the house, and then there's a couple other guys. Twitch, the guy from So You Think You Can Dance. There. Okay. So, but when I watched it, I could.
Oh, are we going to get a critique of Magic Mike? Yeah.
Oh yeah. He was. You could tell that he knew how to make the sexual connection. So like you have dancers, who you know they're classically trained, but the stripping is different. It's dancing, but you're creating this sexual tension while you're connecting with right. this woman in a way that is more sexual than it is technically.
You think you're dancing. Good because you like because you love women for real, oh, and yeah, and all different them. Kinds of women,
yeah,
and
yeah.
you are highly sexually charged.
Yeah, well, a lot less now because I'm older, but yeah.
Don't get all cute now.
I'm like, yeah.
I'm just like a little boy.
I just like my toys.
I have a little experience.
You, by the way, are you related to Channing Tatum? Did you teach him any moves?
No. But I was going to say, when I watch him, a good stripper would look at him and go, yeah, that dude knows okay. what he's doing.
I did see a picture of you and Channing Tatum, right?
Yeah. We're cool. We're pretty cool. I haven't smoked him in about 6-7 years, but, okay. but if I ran into him, he's a really good dude that he would like, oh, you know, he's just right. a good guy.
But is it a coincidence that you know him and you were both strippers?
We did the movie Fighting together.
Okay.
Which was in 2009 where I fight him. I'm his, right. one of his adversaries in the movie.
Do you body roll into the fight?
Well, we actually
each other up.
We dive hump. We dive hump in.
Why do you guys keep lifting each other over your head and then you just stop?
One of my favorite. I've only been to a strip club a couple of times, but one of my favorite moves is when the guy takes off his belt in one swoop and then slaps it on the floor.
Yeah,
can you do that?
No, I didn't do that. I didn't wear a belt. I used to dress.
Did you wear a banana hammock, but it's an elephant?
No, never that. You never, those, actually, you know, those things, it's like,
you always slap your dick on brides' faces.
Of course, you okay. have to do that. Yeah. That's a prerequisite.
I mean, it's $50 max to get in. I mean, minimum.
But I used to slap the floor, like the wood floor.
I would enjoy that.
Like, pow! And it would just wake everybody up. Like, what the?
Yes.
Because it's a sexual, it's like you're smacking sure. their ass, or you like, or it's like smacking ugly. It's just, I don't know what it is. It's just kind of has this kind of sexual.
You ever
content.
See a guy?
I know what it is. It's dominance.
Yeah.
Duh.
Well. You ever right. see a? You ever see a guy come into the club and take his woman away?
Yeah, I had a fight with a bunch of dudes.
Yes. For that. Why am I getting excited? I'm sorry.
Well, Ken's a little horned up. She's been having a time. And only one leg works right now from an accident.
So, tell me about that.
I have 4 months of celibacy left.
She was hurt and she's trying to learn about herself. So anyway.
Tell us about the fight.
Somebody's going to give him the mop.
I used to fight all the time at the clubs. Because again, they would, if you're stripping, they think you're a punk.
Right.
And, you know. I just ain't, you but, know, just really that's not what I am.
But what would happen? They would find out where the woman's at? No,
well, sometimes you would have shows. In the 90s, every party had a stripper, a male and a female stripper. Okay. That was the ongoing entertainment. Like, you had a party, that's what you did. Right. And so they would have a male and a female. And usually what they would
that's
do
funny.
Is...
That's funny. I did that in the 90s. I had a party one time. And it was a housewarming. And I hired a male and a female stripper just to... Like, oh, here's the thing, though. They sucked because I was like, hey, dress like... You're going to be at my party. My party is full of just people with shirts and a t-shirt. Mm-hmm. And then like pretend like you're a party guest. All of a sudden you're dancing. You feel it too hard. And now you're stripping. Mm-hmm. Ha ha ha.
Right.
These fucking assholes came like they just got out of a wedding.
Right.
Huh. The guy I think actually wore a tux.
Really?
And they look like Barbie and Ken already, you know? And that's not what my friends look like. Yeah. You know, we're artists. And so it's like you already stand out. And I'm like, yes, these are strippers. Yes. Surprise.
A sparkly vest.
Well, you know what? It's in a way, I mean, there is an integrity to, I mean, if you really do it, there's an integrity to it. So you have your character, and then it's sort of like somebody telling you when you're a comic, yeah, you know, my friend's here. Make fun of my, I don't give a fuck about your friend.
But I called an agency and told them that was the scenario.
Yeah. But it's a thing where, you know, if you're kind of selling out, you know what I mean?
As a stripper, would you perform for lawbreakers?
Absolutely. I there was a dude, there was a huge drug dealer up in Harlem that used to throw these huge parties, and he would always book me for the show to kind of heat up the party a little bit. And I mean, it would, like, he got indicted, federal indictments and shit, but he was...
he knew how to entertain.
Yeah. I mean, it was... I don't know if you remember this. When Madonna was implicated with... Madonna had hooked some dude up with... There was coke being dealt, and Madonna had connected this lady with a dude who was a party promoter. And it was in the papers and stuff like that. And Madonna was like,
we just assume this is happening. It's Madonna and whoever she's talking to. There might be coke. Who gives a shit?
But the guy, the woman that he hooked up was he was actually the guy. She was undercover. And they had this whole thing. But I used to dance for him and you know, his parties and all the promoters all over Brooklyn and stuff.
So then,
Manhattan, Bronx, all the five boroughs.
When you have comedians opening up your show, do you start going, what am I doing? This is what I should be doing.
I always wanted to do it. Even as a kid, I wanted to do it. But I got into this this stripping thing.
Which makes money.
Yeah. And it got so big that I didn't think that anybody would take me serious as a comedian. I actually had, I don't know if you remember back 90s and 2008, you would have a radio bump. So they'd be like, hey, I'm LL Cool J. When I'm not licking my lips, I'm licking my lips for a Hot 97 or whatever. So I had a bump, and my stage name was Mandingo. And it was Prince Mandingo. So I would go, hey, this is Prince Mandingo. And when I'm not taking my clothes off, I keep my radio on, Kiss F 98.7, Kiss F, whatever it was. Okay. And I had bumps. Like, it was that serious. Like, I couldn't walk down the street. I was signing autographs in the street. Like,
with that's your how dick?
Big. I wish. that's really thick writing. I mean, what are you going to sign that on? So,
do people ask you how big your dick is, or is that weird?
It's happened.
Are you a shower or a grower? Assault, or are you okay?
More of a grower, but I think that my thought about that was that, I mean, I was dancing with dudes with 14, 16, 12 inch, like, they were monsters.
What?
Yeah, it was like, really.
Did you say 14 inches?
14 inch dick. They had a dude 16 inch dick.
No.
Yes. Name was Pistol Packing Pete from Philly.
Well, you can start naming feet by then, right?
Yeah, I can.
Yeah, it's like saying your baby's
foot and 4 inches.
My baby's 600 months old. You know.
but that dude's like monsters, like porno dicks, and
that sounds like torture.
Well, no shit, you got to do personality, right?
Yeah, and then what they used to do, and there was a style that came out of Philly, what we used to call beefing up, was where you'd get a magazine, you jerk your dick off, get it hard, and then they wouldn't use cock rings. They used to use inch
piano wire,
ace bandage.
Okay.
Because you can put an ace bandage on your knee and run, you know? So it would...
It's like an inch wide ace bandage.
Inch and a half ace bandage behind the balls.
Behind the balls?
Yeah.
That's the secret.
At the base.
Yeah. And then how hard do you stay with that?
They stay hard.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. It's not really healthy.
No.
And it gets painful after a while.
I would assume.
Yeah. It gets a little painful after a while. But, that was the thing, and then the whole business kind of went from the theatric aspect of it to just, and that's when the business really went shit.
One second, I want to tell everybody about Quip, Quip. It's the toothbrush I use. Hemda uses it. It's electric, but not big and bulky like a regular electric one when you think electric, right?
Yeah, not as expensive either. It was so affordable that I have one at home, and I also have one when I stay at my brother's family's place. It's an electric toothbrush that doesn't take up the amount of room that the regular one does. And it's just, it actually is the size of a regular toothbrush. So here's what I like actually the most in it. Mm-hmm. I know that I'm brushing my teeth for 2 minutes because it indicates it every 30 seconds. So I know to do 30 seconds on the top right, 30 seconds on the top left, bottom right, bottom left, obviously. And then when it's done, it's this sense of satisfaction. Actually, I told my friend Aldo about it, mm-hmm. and he recently texted me. He said, dude, I came in for my 6-month dental cleaning. It took less than 15 minutes on the actual cleaning. That goddamn Quip really works.
That's right. It's great. You're going to love it too. Over 1 million happy, healthy mouths do. Quip starts at just $25.
That's the craziest part.
Yeah. And if you go to getquip.com/MOL for my opening line, /MOL, right now, you can get your first refill pack for free. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/MOL. So what makes you finally get the balls, no pun, to do stand up? Is it when you're putting on an Ace Bands on your dick and you're like, what am I doing?
I had already stopped. I had stopped stripping already. Okay. I stopped in 98. And
what makes you stop when money's so good?
It's a real easy answer. When you have to decide whether the G-string goes over your stomach or under your stomach, that's when it's time to pack it in.
It's time to be funny.
Although there were a lot of dudes that just couldn't get away from that life, and yeah, they would be awfully out of shape and whatever, and they would still be doing it, and you're like, oh, this is not good, you know. So that was
body rolls look different.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Like body waves.
Now the girls start picking them up. Look, I can do it too.
And then they so you just, for me it was just something like, and you know, I need to this. And then it became all about showing your dick, big dicks, and having, you know, showing your dick. And
Did you do that?
I used to do fully nude in private, you know, like if you hired me for your house. I would do that. But I didn't do public nudity, 500, 1,200 women.
Do brides-to-be have sex with the stripper?
Absolutely. Oh, boy. Absolutely.
Oh, boy.
I had a situation. Oh, I went out to Long Island.
That's like terrifying.
And
yeah.
I went out to Long Island, and I was in this, they put me in this little bathroom, and the bride comes in.
Fucking Long Island.
And she comes in, and she starts blowing me in the bathroom, and then we get busted by her mother-in-law.
Oh my God.
And now you have to fuck her too.
You're ahead of the story.
No.
So the mother-in-law goes, you bitch, you came in here and didn't even call me. And then they both, so they would hang
Come
out.
On.
They would hang, they would, apparently, they, her,
Wait,
they
the
would.
The mother, I just want to be clear about the science terms. The mother-in-law is the
father, the groom's what, mother, yes. The
groom's mother.
Yes. So you were like, so it was like I guess they partied together. They hung, you know, they were like girls and they hung out. And then I was like, and then they invited me to the wedding, and I was like,
ew.
So this guy's getting married and I had sex with his mother and his wife to be. And so it taints your thinking, like, cause you kind of think of, oh no, you know, women wouldn't do that.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then you're like, yeah, they would, you know.
Do you think the dude had a clue? Like, are they, is this like, whoa, this is out of character for all the emails back and forth and like how you talk about your husband?
I don't know the dude or anything, but I feel like people are always have a clue and they ignore it because they're willing to negotiate their self-esteem or their value in order to not be alone, you know? So
that's true. That's, if I may recommend the book in the middle of all this sex talk, The 6 Pillars of Self-Esteem.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Because that does like get to the core of that. But anyway, wait, we keep getting sexed up with you.
Okay, so anyway, I
first
quit.
First time doing stand-up.
I quit dancing and I was working for the phone company. And then I ran for an office in the union of the phone company, and I became a delegate for the union because I was just looking for something to do. And that was kind of fun because it was, you know, I was arbitrating against corporations and stuff. And that's really kind of, you got to be sharp. It's like lawyer stuff, okay, interpreting, and, you know, you argue and you save people jobs and stuff. And then I kind of got bored of that. And I wanted, a friend of mine approached me about a clothing line. So I did I started an urban clothing line with a friend of mine. And this is a weird
what
thing.
What was it called? Match Your Tim's?
It was called Dante Rogus. He was me, Ron, and his cousin Gus, right? And we, you know, when we would started out, it was growing pretty good. But what happens, I think, sometimes is when you are a bit of a roughneck, you don't really realize how that affects other people, how they perceive you. So when I was stripping, this guy who worked with me at the phone company, he came to a strip show. I was like, y'all should come. There's nothing but women there. You know, it's a great time. It's like 12 guys and 600 women, right? And they were like, and I had beef with a guy, another stripper, for pay and stuff, like, you know, some kind of extortive. And so I told my boy, I said, look, I want you to come, but look, I might have a little static. I just want you to stay out of it. My boys will be there. It's fine. Don't worry. And the guy goes, nah, if I'm with you, I'm with you. You know, he's trying to be whatever. And I go, okay. So we go.
And I go, okay.
I go, yeah, all right. So we're in a room, in this room where there's a pool table, and the guy who was extorting people, not extorting, he just wasn't paying people, basically. And I had a group, and he had stiffed a couple of my guys. And I said to my boy who from the phone company, I was like, yo, you want something to drink? He goes, yeah, yeah. I said, all right. I gave him a few dollars. Yo, get what you want. Get me in, whatever, whatever. And he leaves. And when he leaves, I go, yo, you got a problem paying people? And he goes, yo, what you got to do with it? And then, bong, I hit him. He knocked him out.
That's what you got to do with it.
And when he came back, when my boy came back, the dude was out, right? And
you didn't wait for me.
And the thing is, the thing is that I think that affected him when we went into business together.
So I work with an animal, right?
and so everything in the clothing line, if I would say, let's do straight legs, he would go, let's do, you know, he just gave me opposition because I felt like he was always trying to keep the line. And all I wanted to do was do business, you know what I mean? And it was just so aggravating, you know, right. And he was talking to me all kinds of crazy. And I was like, you know, and I really just did the clothing line. So because once I was looking for this outlet, I was like, I'm going to do stand up. And having the clothing line was a way not to do stand up. So I did the clothing line. We did that for 2 years. And then did it for two years almost. And then when I had this argument with this dude, I go, look, I'm going to do stand up. I don't give a fuck what happened. I'm going to do stand up and I'm giving up this stupid. I'm not going to argue with this dude about this clothesline. And I gave him signed away the rights to the whole thing and naturally went to shit afterwards because I was really.
You had the straight leg ideas.
Yeah. So I wanted eyelets on the hoodie laces.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. And he was like, no, let's just do knots. And we literally were arguing shit like that. And I gave it up. And the next day that I told him I was out, I found a class online, a comedy class online, and I showed up the next day.
How much was the class?
I think it was like $350, okay. $250 or $350, like eight.
Did you have a recital at the end of it?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. That's how they get you.
How'd you do?
That was my first show. Now, if anybody knows me, like I'm really meticulous about, like I don't really just talk shit. Like I will, and if you have something,
you thought you're stand up through. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Well, I was walking around in my day carry bag. I had eight comedy books.
Okay.
That I was reading all simultaneously. I was learning structure and this and that because I also was kind of a roughneck and I didn't think people would think I'm funny. So I knew that in order to be funny, I needed to be really technically sound. So I really studied the technique of, joke structure, double entendres, right. Play on words, misdirection, list. You know, I just knew I was a book when it came.
I thought you were going to use the N-word over there, a nerd.
Oh, no.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, yeah, I'm a nerd. I'm definitely a nerd. I mean, I'm, tech nerd. I'm a, comic book nerd. I'm a,
stripper nerd.
Stripper nerd.
Fucking chicks nerd.
Fucking chicks nerd.
When you would hear somebody, for example, say, Joe Piscopo, he's working out, he's not funny anymore. Did that make you nervous?
Are
you like, shit, people are going to look at me, see a tough guy, unrelatable almost.
Yeah, it did. I didn't think people would relate to me because I'm not a person that people laugh at.
Right.
Do you know? And so what I did was I created a character of what I thought people would perceive me as.
Okay.
So I would wear a wife beater, bandana, right? Jeans, Tim's. And, you know, I had the bone in my ear still, and I was all tatted up and stuff. And I would walk on stage, and everybody would be like, what the fuck is this, right? And I would just be silent for, like, almost a minute, not say anything.
It's a long time.
And somebody would go, and I would look at them, and they would go, like, and then I'd get up to the mic, and I'd go, and then they would laugh, because there's just so much tension in the room, right? And I go, before I start, I just want to say that everybody should laugh as long and as loud as possible. I go, I've been known to have psychotic episodes, and it's brought on by a lack of acceptance, right? That was my first joke, and they would just lose it. And then I would do a series of kind of Stephen Wright one-liners. So my first joke would be, I never had many friends, mostly just hostages, right? And then I'd go, me and my father were close. We used to play dodge brick, right? Okay. So it's just like bung, bung. And the jokes worked with the character, sure. Right? And so I was killing, like I was destroying, because
Your phone doesn't know how to respond to that.
Your phone heard that you need responses, and it you responded. Know what it
is? I'm sorry, it's my Apple Watch is talking.
I just want you to know that his phone was like, "Hey, it's 4:20. Come on, you have your vapor right there."
Because stripping is the same thing. You find a character and you create this continuity with the character. It's the same kind of thing. And so it was really easy for me to kind of figure out how they perceived me and what I would do and how I would do it. And so it was, I was killing, like, right out the gate. Couldn't lose.
And that's how you met Patrice, because he wasn't at the strip clubs, right?
No, he was not at the male strip clubs, which is funny because I remember when I started doing comedy, somebody said to me, because it was people either loved Patrice or they hated him, right? You know? And this girl said, you should meet this guy, Patrice O'Neill. This girl. I don't know. You probably know her. You know Jessica Delfino?
Yeah, of course.
So Jessica and I used to do open mics and get stuff together. And she said to me, you should meet this guy, Patrice O'Neill. He's really funny. But she goes, but his heart is pumps this black substance, not unlike oil. And I remember being at the Boston Comedy Club, and I didn't know who he was, but I kind of got a feel from what everybody was saying that he was right. Who he was, and we talked and kind of cool, and I think we hit it off like right away, and we exchanged numbers.
Is he abrasive and you like that, or was it easygoing? And I asked because I remember when he passed away, all the comedian stories sounded like, this guy must be an asshole. I would call him up and I'd say, oh, it's me, Robert Kelly, and I'm feeling kind of shitty today. What are you, a faggot? And that's my relationship with Patrice. I'm like, Robert, that's not good.
But he was also a dude who would, like, he would throw a barbecue and spend thousands of dollars to feed everybody. Yeah. Just like prime rib and lobsters. And then he would cook. Like, he'd spend a whole day barbecuing for everybody on 4th of July. You know, he had a weird duality to him. Right. Like, for instance, him, you know, they had a riot. He really hated Lisa Lampanelli. Not Lisa Lampanelli, but he hated her comedy.
Okay.
Because it was contrived and kind of inauthentic.
I'm pretty sure she slept with all those guys.
That she would talk about on stand up, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't that many guys, let's be honest. We've seen her.
My goodness.
Well, she still owes me some money for an album cover that I shot with her.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, she did the Janet Jackson cover where you hold the tits. Those are my hands holding the tits, and I never got paid for that.
Is that true? That's funny.
Yeah.
Did she think taking the picture was payment in itself?
Clearly, she couldn't have thought that.
Okay.
There's no way she could have thought that.
So you and Patrice, you hit it off.
We hit it off. And then I said to him, yo, then when I first, oh, you, and I, we spoke on the phone the first time. And I said, when I first heard about you, didn't know who you are. And somebody told me, I told him what Jessica Delfino, I didn't say that she said it, but I said that your heart pumps this. And they told me, and so I go, all right, cool, later. And then he calls me back and he says, he goes, so when you heard all this bad shit about me, what made you call me. You know, what made you want to, you know, look up? And I go, because I'm not scared of you. Like I've had guns in my face. I've been stabbed. I'm and like, right. your words, is, like, I'm not scared of you.
That's what they say, right? Go to the biggest person in prison.
Yeah, that never works. You get knocked out extra hard and then multiply raped. But whatever. But yeah, I said, I'm not scared of you. And then he was like, oh, okay. And then we were, right. That was it.
Now he passes away and you do the Beige Phillips show. Beige, yeah. Of course, is a grayish tan.
I'm because he was dark skinned and I was light skinned. That was the play on it.
And wait, he was dark skinned and you were light skinned.
Yeah. So he was Black Phillip.
Right.
And when I did the show, I called it Beige
Phillip. Okay. Yeah. And then Harry Tarjanian joins you right away or later?
He was the tech guy to set it up, set everything. So he was on it immediately.
Yeah, because he can't keep quiet. Very funny, but he's not going to just sit there, right? Exactly. Next thing you know, you have half a co-host. Yeah. And by the way, we brought up acting briefly. Nice amount in The Blacklist.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Limitless. About eight episodes.
Limitless, Damages. What do you like more? Stand-up or acting?
Stand up.
Okay.
It's immediate reaction. It's like you are connecting with the audience in an immediate way, and you have an immediate response. So when you do acting and you do a movie or something, you're making these artistic choices, but then it goes it's out of your hands, and then you don't know whether they how they edited or which version of whatever you're doing, you don't know. And so it's out of your control. With comedy, you have control over all of it. And it's, which is interesting, because I was, I had a really big part. I had a decent part in John Wick 2, and that got edited out, all of it, except for a little flash of me in the opening scenes.
What are you, like the 16th person to get shot?
I was John Leguizamo. Did you see the first one?
Yeah.
So John Leguizamo, I was John Leguizamo's hitman.
Okay.
His right hand man. And if you remember John Wick 2, they pretty much wrote John Leguizamo out because Ruby Rose, they rewrote the movie for Ruby Rose because Ruby Rose was so hot that from Orange is the New Black, and they rewrote the whole movie and John Leguizamo got written out. And so then I got written out as well.
Do you write like the director a letter and be like, I got an idea. How about fuck John Leguizamo? I don't work for him anymore.
If I knew that, you know, it is, you just kind of show up, you know, and acting is that thing is they pick you and they show up. And usually they don't even know what they want until they see it anyway. It's kind of all fluid.
Say, I'll be in John Wick 3. I'll be one of the dogs. There's a lot of dogs.
I would look, dude, and I loved John Wick movies. It's because I took shit money to do it, and then I shot it, and then I got edited out. Then I was in Ocean's 8, the new Ocean's movie, and I got edited out of that. Two in the same day. So
because then they realized they wanted all chicks. Like, why do we have one dude in the crew?
I'll tell you what it was. Anne Hawthorne was supposed to be the antagonist.
Anne Hathaway?
Yeah, Anne Hathaway was supposed to be the antagonist, and they ended up making her part of the Ocean's 8 crew.
Yeah.
So because of that, I was one of Anne Hathaway's hitmen who was chasing Sandra Bullock and Cate Blanchett around. Okay. And that whole scene, that whole storyline got bumped. And I shot 17 days.
Oh my God.
The whole storyline got cut out.
Do you leave the movie theater? Do you see the movie?
No. I saw it since then. But I didn't make it to the premiere. I didn't go to the premiere. I got edited out. And then I just was like, I'm not watching this crap. So,
But you did see it?
Later. Yeah, on TV.
Okay.
Yeah.
When you see it, did you like it?
It's okay.
Okay. Does that please you? Like, good. Fuck them.
You know what? You can't.
I mean, you have to naturally feel one way or the other. Does it make you happy?
I was sad that I got moved because, you know, for a comic, that visibility is more important than anything else.
But I would want the movie to fail. I would have left the theater happy.
You know what?
Because I would have left the theater going, fuck them for not putting me in it. Okay, so now, yes, that's messing with my brain. But now I'm glad. I'm glad that... You know who saved the day in an all-woman movie? A guy did.
Yeah.
Who collected all the jewelry?
Yeah.
A guy did.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Fuck you, Anne Hawthorne.
I mean, I appreciate you caring about me.
I get invested. That's all. Dude, it's always nice to see you. Your show is going very well.
Yeah, it is good.
Stand up, of course, you're doing great at it. The stripping, do you miss it?
No, not at all.
Do you randomly just walking down the street pick people up?
No, I mean, I used to when I was in my 20s. I got a bad back now, so, you know.
Do you still strip for, like, lovers?
When girls have asked me to do that. Mm-hmm. I haven't, you know. But, I mean, so here's, I think, was the...
Are the sparkles on your face and head from the old times?
Right, your glitter.
You never get rid of it.
There's so much glitter, you can't get rid of it. You knew my lifestyle, baby. That was 30 years ago.
I was throwing my Christmas tree out today, and so I have Christmas glitter all over me. So, and that's the story I'm sticking with.
This was recorded in March, by the way, folks.
And I just threw the Christmas tree out today. But yeah, it. You know, I think what made me a good stripper is because I wanted it to look authentic. You know, I wanted the sexual aspect of it to look authentic. So, you know, if you get a guy goes to a strip club, the girl is attractive, she got a nice body, nice tits, like whatever, they're in. Women, it's something that you have to do something to kind of, it's these little subtle, the devil's in the detail, where they'll look at the way you arch your back or the way your toe is digging into the ground, you know, just little things that just kind of say to them, no, this is different. So, so when I got into business, guys would, when they, you know, everybody would do like a fake hump, but they would do it like in a push-up position. Mm-hmm. So they'd be raised up and it was kind of like, and I used to do it where I would grind my G-string into the floor.
Smart.
And women would go like, this is different, you know? Or like, you know how you get a lap dance and somebody straddles you on the chair, right? And they're facing you. I would push my body against them with manly strength so they could feel the strength, the pressure. And they would be, you just see the women go, oh, what, like... Oh, this is not. Mm-hmm. This is not just fun, you know. They would be like, oh,
you felt their boners.
Yeah, yeah, and you could. No, well, it wasn't even the boner. It was the movement of your hips. It, like you'd be circling your hips, and they could feel it when you press right against their body, and they would go, oh, this is
the, like, you know, sex.
Yeah, and then that was the thing. So the authenticity of it was.
Would you ever, you grind on a woman in the audience.
Yeah.
You go backstage. TV happens to be on.
It's right.
A news flash of a flood warning. Do you take responsibility? Do you have to say something to security?
You know, listen, you want to make an omelet, you got to break some eggs.
I hear you.
It's what it is.
You know what? This has been really fun because we got to know a lot about your comedy career.
Yeah.
Just pushing.
A lot of pushing.
Right. That is funny. It took you so long to do comedy when deep down you knew that's what you wanted to do.
I always wanted to do it. Yeah. And I started late, and you know, I'm 18 years in now, and I'm really having fun because those same principles, those principles of being authentic and intent,
right,
the same things that I talk about on my podcast about, you know, and with Man School, I talk about, so I have this acronym ACE, which is authenticity, credibility, and empathy. And if you always do that checklist, you're always in the ballpark of where you should be. And so that goes for comedy or art. It goes for sex. I mean, just being authentic about what your intent is and not, you know, when we talk about the whole Me Too thing, I always say the problem with it is that.
Oh boy, that's a good starter sentence.
Yeah,
go ahead. Tell us about the problem with
the toxic masculinity, I should have said, is that in this country we've had, it's always been, if you didn't have a personality and you didn't have something to attract women, you said, okay, I'm gonna study hard, I'm gonna get rich, I'm gonna be powerful, and then I'm gonna bend people's will. Not just women's will, but they've been this is the thing. So now I'm getting everybody back. I got sand kicked in my face and that. And so then the rules change where that's not okay. But this is all they had in the first place. So the difference is, and you say that, like you say, I'm very sexually charged. But the difference is I don't have any Me Too. Like, if anybody, people would assume if anybody's got it, I got it. Like, somebody's Me Too and saying I did something.
Sure.
But the reality is that I don't want to fuck somebody that doesn't want to fuck me. Because why would I want to? Like, that's never good. So as soon as somebody is not, so I'm always looking for the moment where the woman goes, yeah, I'm not into this. And then I'll ask, if you're not into this, we could just not.
I don't know how we got here, but I want to be clear, I don't either.
So. Right. It's very interesting. Do you know that I don't have to look for the moment they don't want it?
I
get that, you know, as men, we were raising very, very specific personalities.
Sure.
And very, very specific forks in the road and avenues to take as a man. And the description of masculinity.
Right.
While that was happening, we were also describing female situations in the same terrible path, but we were always second class citizens on top of everything else.
I agree.
So that is the problem with how we're trying to change people's minds is we drilled into them, men are like this, and women are like this.
This is a product of our own personal teaching.
And of course, we're going on a different tangent now.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We always do that. Yeah.
Well, you want to hear more, you listen to the Beige Phillips Show. And by the way, I mean, of course, you should be subscribed to that. But you should have found out I was on it regardless.
Yes.
Because on the Laughable app, you type in my name, you see everywhere I'm at.
We had a ball. God, we had a ball.
Oh, man. We taught people. We learned our lessons. Etika. All right. Dante, always a pleasure. Thank you,
brother. I appreciate it.
And now the closing theme song. What you just heard was my opening line. Please subscribe and tell your friends. Go to myopeningline.com.